This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 29th of July 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 28th of July 2016, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: Carfax scheme major setback, uproar over rejection of station approach; leisure centre plans push on; and no tips closing as hours change. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
And this is the Carfax scheme major setback. A major regeneration scheme in Winchester has been derailed after councillors snubbed the winners of a design competition. City councillors voted by 19 votes to 16 not to support the plans for station approach that had won a design competition. Among the councillors defying the leaders of the Conservative group were Kim Gottlieb and Rose Burns, who also opposed the Silver Hill scheme. City Council leader Stephen Godfrey warned the scheme not going ahead on the Carfax site could cost hundreds of jobs. Now the council will have to oversee fresh plans for the Carfax site. He told the Chronicle, "People who voted against were more concerned about the process rather than the fact we now have no scheme. I'm disappointed members did not take the wider picture into account." He said two firms in the city with 489 employees had expressed interest in moving into the site and said they would move away from Winchester if they do not find the space to expand. The winners of a design competition, referred to as Bidder B, but known to be Hopkins Architects, were rejected as the chosen designers. This now means the scheme is set back more than a year, according to Councillor Godfrey. Making his case for the scheme before the vote, he spoke of the business advantages and the need for more office space. He also argued that the plans could be changed and improved. Councillor Godfrey added the council were hoping to secure a grant of £7.7 million of local enterprise partnership, LEP, funding as part of the project. That is now in doubt, he said. If we start again, not only will we put back a project by 12 to 16 months and the possibility of losing the LEP funding, we would have no realm strategy. We will have to start again. And where will we get? Nowhere. He added Denplan and Lane Clark and Peacock LLP could now relocate from the city. Liberal Democrat councillor Martin Todd launched a scathing attack on the process, questioning why the council, for the full council meeting, didn't have the design jury's report, which criticised Bidder B, with no marks being in the good range. He asked why the council was instead using a report by an advisor of the Royal Institute of British Architects, known as REBA, which commended Bidder B's concept. Councillor Todd said, "Can we fix this?" "No, we can't. We have no room for manoeuvre. It's like changing the colours of an IKEA bookcase." He likened the scheme to looking like it would be a concrete wasteland with too much parking and yuppie flats. Lib Dem group leader Lucille Thompson described the scheme as a gross overdevelopment. She told the Chronicle, "They are trying to pack too much into both sides, Carfax and the cattle market. More parking is not needed at Carfax, as Network Rail are planning to put a deck on the car park off St Paul's Hill. In fact, it is Southwest Trains who plan to put an extra deck over the car park on Stockbridge Road. In a passionate speech, Councillor Ian Tate, Conservative, said he supported the scheme and said stopping it would be a self-inflicted injury. Councillor Tate said, "What are we trying to achieve here? Are we trying to kick a decision into the long grass, or are we trying to move matters forward?" Councillor Dominic Hiscock, Lib Dem, said the council did not listen to council members and residents. "When making a decision, you should take the members with you, otherwise you get voted down. You should go away and sit down and put your head somewhere and think how on earth are you going to do something that people of the city find unacceptable. We won't do that if you do not listen to what residents in this city have to say and what the members have to say." After the vote, the meeting heard the implications of the decision from Head of Estates Kevin Warren, who said the city is now in danger of losing its largest employers. Chris Cave, a commercial property agent from Vale Williams, said the council may have to look at building the scheme itself, as it has given off a bad message to potential developers and designers. Mr. Cave said, "Working on the assumption pre-June 23, there is a potential for a viable scheme, and given the parts in the brief, it would need to be a similar scheme to B and C proposals. The difficulty the council has got is the message that is given to the outside world. One can only imagine how bidder B must be thinking." He said the difficulty of a new scheme would increase after bidder B was rejected. Councillor Godfrey said the council will attempt to continue with the development, but a decision on how £1.2 million of taxpayers' money should be spent on furthering the plans will be discussed by the Cabinet. Keith Lehman, chairman of the City of Winchester Trust, said he was concerned about the strained relationships between different groups. "There now seems to be a fracture between the councillors, their officers, and the public." Meanwhile, council confirmed any development on the cattle market has been put back 18 months. Steve Harburn of the Station Area Neighbourhood Group welcomed the news and said, "The council should channel its efforts into resolving the Silver Hill development and start to look at ways of dealing with the major traffic, congestion, environmental and pollution issues facing all who live, work or visit the city before embarking on any further major building developments." Councillors backing the plan were all Conservatives. Ashton, Berry, Brooke, Burns, Gemmell, Godfrey, Horrell, Huckstep, Mather, McLean, Pearson, Ruffle, Stallard, Tate, Thacker and Weston. Voting against were the Liberal Democrats and three Conservatives, Ackwall, Bell, Bentote, Clear, Cutler, Elks, Evans, Hiscock, Laming, Lerney, Porter, Prince, Rutter, Thompson, Todd and Weir. The three Tories were Burns, Gottlieb and Jeffs. The following abstained: Cook, Conservative, Green, Izzard, Scott, all Lib Dems.
Leisure centre plans push on. Councillors are pressing ahead with plans for a new multi-million pound leisure centre in Winchester. City councillors at full council have decided the centre should include a 50-metre pool. The new centre, likely to be built at Bar End, would also have a 12-court sports hall, hydrotherapy pool, four squash courts, a fitness gym with four studios, soft play and cafe facilities. The latest news will please sports campaigners, including Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club. The exact location for a centre in Bar End has yet to be decided. There are two options: the Tesco-owned Garrison Ground next to Bar End Road, or the King George V field off Milland Road. The current earmarked location is at the King George V field, which some Highcliffe residents feel will lead to a loss of playing space for children. Councillor Eileen Berry said it's an exciting opportunity, but called for the centre to be profit-making and one that will attract athletes and families from across Hampshire. Fellow Tory councillor Linda Gemmell said she was concerned about affordability for swimmers after she and other councillors visited a similar centre in St Albans, charging what she described as extortionate fees. Councillor Gemmell said, £6.20 a swim is not affordable for the people I represent. Who are you building this for? If it's the elite, I am not happy. Conservative councillor Ian Tait said the project won't please everyone but should go ahead. He said, "We will not be able to make this omelette without cracking some eggs. This is a challenging project financially and meeting the needs of users and residents affected by this." Liberal Democrat councillor Martin Todd told the meeting he believes the 50-metre pool and the water space is fundamental to providing for an increased population, and that people are becoming healthier and living longer. But, he said, the financial modelling needs more work. Lib Dem councillor Kelsey Lerney said that the 50-metre pool option is not a requirement for Winchester University funding and is unnecessary. Should the facility have a 50-metre pool, the overall cost of the project would be around £34 million. However, the question of its exact location has been the subject of debate by campaigners who have called for it to be built on the garrison ground, which is owned by Tesco. City Council leader Stephen Godfrey said they are in negotiations with Tesco, who have a clearer asking price, but as it stands, this is still too high and council officers are trying to lower it. The project will be funded by the council, but also partners involved with the University of Winchester pledging £6 million. And there will also be a contribution from the Pinder Trust and a possible contribution from Hampshire County Council. The council voted nearly unanimously to spend around £770,000 for design, project management and other professional services, including creating a master plan and community engagements required to move plans forward.
No tips closing as hours change. No tips in Hampshire will be closed, but their opening times will change. Hampshire County Council rubber-stamped plans to retain all 24 of its household waste recycling centres, those HWRCs, including at Alresford, but they will close on Thursdays and open 2 hours later on other days. The announcement comes after a four-month public consultation looking into the council's plans to make £1.5 million cut to the service. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council, said, "I would first like to thank all those that took the trouble to respond to the consultation. This has helped to form the basis of the recommendations that I have agreed. Hampshire residents told us very clearly that their priority was to keep all HWRCs open, and I am genuinely pleased that we have found a way to make this happen. We do need to save money in the running costs of the service this year, but we will try to do this by opening 2 hours later each day at 11 a.m, that's outside the peak morning traffic times, and closing on a Thursday. We've achieved additional savings through procurement of a new management contract, and we will also introduce a small charge for people living outside Hampshire so they can continue to use our service. We will also be opening up the HWRC's service for the first time for small businesses to use on a chargeable basis. One of the other changes includes residents being charged for the disposal of soil, rubble, gypsum and asbestos. Councillor Keith House, leader of Hampshire's Liberal Democrat opposition group, welcomed the fact that the County Council had given a temporary reprieve to the closing of the HWRCs, but urged them to think again about their long-term closure plans. He said, "We regret that they now won't open each day until 11 a.m, a reduction of 2 hours a day, and will also be closed all days Thursdays. We are extremely concerned that this, together with the introduction of a charge for the household DIY-type waste, could lead to fly-tipping."
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Collins, Valerie Collins, on the 18th of July, aged 78. Creswell, Louisa Ann Creswell, on the 15th of July, aged 85. Crouch, David Crouch, on the 13th of July, aged 53. Dalton, Hazel Dalton, on the 24th of July, aged 59. Ferry, John Neil Foster Ferry, on the 17th of July, aged 83. Hobbs, Derek Hobbs, on the 13th of July, aged 83. Hughes, Geoffrey Bernard, known as Jeff Hughes, on the 20th of July, aged 83. Idison, Brian William Idison, on the 23rd of July, aged 73. Jenkinson, Neil Jenkinson, at Flowerdown Nursing Home, on the 20th of July, aged 77. Roberts, Norman Nicholas William Roberts, on the 21st of July, aged 78. And now we have Christian comment.
This week it is written by Rosemary A. Baker, and she entitles it Pokemon Go, a New Phenomenon. Have you heard of the latest craze, Pokemon Go? I had heard of it, but certainly really didn't understand it, and certainly didn't think of it in terms of something that had a Christian slant to it. I was amazed to read then, in a link sent by a colleague, that the Church of England has developed guidelines on how it can be used as a tool for evangelism. For those of us who are unfamiliar with this cultural phenomenon, it all began in 1996 as a pair of video games for Nintendo's Game Boy. The game developed worldwide, and soon Pokemon trading cards, animated television shows and movies, comic books and toys of all of kinds were available. Pokemon is now the second most lucrative video game based media franchise in the world, second only to Nintendo's all-conquering Mario franchise. The name Pokemon is the short term for Pocket Monster, a fictional animated creature that can be captured, raised and used to fight duels. Players act as the Pokemon trainer, capturing and training Pokemon and using them to battle other Pokemon. In order to play, you simply need a compatible phone and the free app. Oh, and you need to have the capacity to move around, as this game is one you can't play from the comfort of your sofa. I really like the fact that Pokemon Go requires players to walk around in order to visit Pokemon stops, where resources can be gained. Pokestops can be landmarked like war memorials, recreation areas like pubs and parks and places of worship, which include not just churches but mosques and gurdwaras too. This game is putting churches quite literally on the map. There are already millions of Pokemon Go players out there walking about, staring intently at their phones, all ages, races and backgrounds united in a common gaming experience. Not everyone has welcomed Pokemon Go. The extreme right-wing US pastor, Rick Wiles, proclaimed on his program, Pokemon creatures are like virtual cyber demons, digital demons. Most Christians, however, are open to the possibilities that it can be used for, such as bringing parents and their children together, as whole families can take part. Events can be planned at the poke stops, such as drinks, snacks or meals, talks, concerts and even services. The church has been accused of not moving with the times and not catering for the youth of today. Well, this is the way in which it can do both. Obviously, there have to be safeguards, but nothing we do is completely without risk. And that's why the Church of England has issued guidelines to help churches incorporate Pokemon-based activities safely.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We have a lesser crop of letters this week than usual. I don't know if everybody's away on holiday. The first four of which continue the reverberations about the referendum.
And here we go. Poorly informed, says Harvey Cole. Sir, voters on both sides of the referendum certainly did not feel well informed. They got exaggeration and too many statistics from Remain and a series of whopping lies from Leave, which the main propagators admitted they had never believed almost the moment the polls had closed. The public's main complaint was lack of reliable information. This may well have led millions to vote against their own interests. Take Cornwall, the poorest English county. In the last 6 years, it has received over £500 million in aid from Europe, around £1,000 per head, and a similar amount was due by 2020. Yet 57% of Cornish voters opted for Leave. That letter is from Harvey Cole, Clifton Road, Winchester.
Ben Mitchell writes, Seek mandate. Sir, since the EU referendum campaign that divided the nation and magnified existing fault lines, pitting friends and families and old political allies against each other, the word on most politicians' lips has been unity. As we go down this already uncertain and windy road, it is in nobody's interests to remain entrenched in the Remain-Leave factions. Rather than waiting in vain for leaving the EU to heal these wounds, to properly address the divisions in the country, what we need going forward is political will and consensus. Unity that respects the result of the referendum without ignoring the views of the 48%, and importantly looks beyond Europe to the divisive question in British politics. On this matter, the two-party leadership elections being fought in this post-Brexit environment won't go far enough. It does not suffice that a few 100,000 electors still reeling from the Leave vote will determine the direction of the country. Since the vote, politics in the UK has changed so dramatically that as we cross into our uncharted territory, the government surely must seek a new mandate to govern. That's from Ben Mitchell, Cott Street, Swanmore.
Mike Kennedy says the IMF got it wrong. Sir, it's hardly a month since the IMF were telling us that voting to leave the EU would be a disaster. But they have now admitted, as we who advocated leave have said all along, that they got their sums wrong. New predictions from the IMF now show that our economy will have grown outside the EU by 1.3% by the end of this year and 1.7% in 2017. This will outpace both France and Germany. How much faster still it will grow once we are truly free remains to be seen, but the signs for continued success are excellent. We have many new trade deals in the offing, including the USA, who were telling us we'd be at the back of the queue for trade shortly before we opted for Brexit. The Scots have been told that they cannot stay in the EU in the way the SNP want, but if they leave the UK, they can apply for membership as an independent country. However, it will mean no opt-outs and having to accept the failing euro. The Commonwealth, our true friends, are gathering around in welcome and support, despite predictions that they wouldn't. Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and India have trade deals worth billions of pounds each, just waiting for us to leave the EU so as to implement them. Inward investment is continuing with Siemens and Boeing, both building new facilities here. In short, the country is recovering far faster than even we, who advocated Brexit, were anticipating, and things can only continue to improve. Despite these facts, we still see some of your regular contributors pleading to reconsider the vote. And now there are even steps being taken to prevent us triggering Article 50 via legal action, despite it being the clear will of the majority of the electorate. Why some people want to surrender all these massive advantages and steady improvements of being out of the control of Brussels, only to return to the calamity of a dictatorship called EU, which is failing and self-destructing, is beyond me. Mike Kennedy, Pine Close, South Wanston.
John Henderson writes about voting irony. Sir, some of your correspondents feel strongly that the voters got the referendum vote wrong. As they are so obviously right, the result cannot be allowed to stand. To meet their objections, may I suggest a new referendum be held, the franchise to be extended to men under the age of 60 and who are owners of Band D properties and better. This will maximise the chance that the elderly, stupid and ignorant will be unable to get it wrong again. This should be held as soon as possible so that there is no possibility that Brexit will be seen to be successful. I am over 60. That's from John Henderson, MA, MSc, CN, FBCS, Edgar Road, Winchester.
This is from Jack Oakley and it's headed Appreciate Help. Sir, I support Philip Ross in his commending of Steve Brine, letters July the 21st. In 2013, I enlisted Steve's help to try to get the DWP, the Department of Work and Pensions, to raise the funeral grant for those on benefit from a derisory £700 to £1,500 so that, for example, a single mum with an aged veteran grandfather or father could provide him with the reasonable send-off. The then minister's reply, turning the suggestion down, is revealing. If the scheme were to allow the full cost of fees levied by funeral directors, then it would become unaffordable and may create additional pressures on local authorities to provide a public health funeral. He also said that from May 2012, budgeting loans, quick and easy to apply for, had been extended to cover funerals. Not such great news for many of my clients who often wonder where the next food money is coming from. Steve did everything he could to assist me and sent me a letter of sympathy about the outcome, and I appreciate all that he did. So I find that the current bitchiness of some of your correspondents unpalatable. Worth pondering, too, by those still fussing about the referendum result, is the accuracy of Steve's remark about the biggest exercise in democracy this country has seen in 30 years, quoted in Justin Kay's letter. I only recently learned, after listening to the erudite Professor Vernon Bogdanor that a full national referendum is necessary every time our MPs concede any sovereign powers vested in Parliament to an outside agency, such as the EU. This, again, in his opinion, they have no remit at all to do, and such action breaks the implicit contract MPs have with those who elected them. And certainly if MPs wish to do it again, it must be validated by a further referendum, not a general election. This is obviously a useful defence, perhaps the only one we, the despised and disregarded, have against the self-seeking political commercial cliques. As for now, Tweftree's letter says it all, crisply and cogently, though perhaps not as crisply as the newly emerged mnemonic sumo. Shut up and move on. That's from Jack Oakley, Oakwood Road, Chandler's Ford.
Jeff Naylor heads his letter, Deplorable State. Sir, it is a deplorable state of affairs if 30,000 jobs engaged in the production of Trident submarines are the only ones in Britain, once extensive manufacturing economy, that MPs are prepared to defend, especially as the defence industry is arguably wasteful and inflationary. Economics has a long overlooked problem of deeming all production, which people and governments are willing to buy, to be wealth creation and of positive value, even when some of it is contrary to the individual or common good, and the furtherance of prosperity for everyone. It is an aberration to measure production that results in adversity as equal to production that results in prosperity. A practice that can be calculated to devalue the money used as the measure and to be a cause of price inflation is the necessities of life. Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Coldon Common.
P. Windsor Aubrey writes about what he calls an omni-shambles, and there is a note from the editor here which I should tell you about, because Mr. Windsor Aubrey refers to a Councillor Humby, and the editor would like us to know that Councillor Humby was speaking as the Hampshire County Council Executive Member for Environment and Transport. And here's the letter. Sir, with reference to your July the 14th story, Public Uproar Saves 20 Refuse Centres, it is now strongly rumoured that the Bar End Recycling Centre will be the subject of an all-day closing on Thursdays and not open until 11 a.m. on all the other days of the week. As a regular user of the Bar End facility, I often have to drive round it twice as it is so busy. Therefore, the proposal to significantly reduce the opening hours strikes me as absolute folly. Councillor Humby promises, quote, new and robust tactics, unquote, to stop fly tipping, which would inevitably result. It might deter people from doing so if he detailed what tactics he was to adopt. I remain deeply cynical. Such additional tactics must be costed and set against the savings that are purported to accrue from the closures. Winchester City Council's track record on dealing with litter on roads is utterly abysmal, so one might view his empty promises on fly tipping as completely worthless. An omni-shambles is imminent. That letter is from P. Windsor Aubrey, Lovett Walk, Hairstock, Winchester.
Now, the next letter is written by Arthur Morgan, and it's headed Probe Conduct. Sir, is it not time to draw the attention to the conduct of Winchester City Council officers concerning their dealings with Station Approach, aka Silver Hill 2? Was it because they were afraid of another judicial review they decided upon a competitive dialogue process which necessitated a design jury? Originally, an open competition to be conducted by the RIBA had been proposed by the City of Winchester Trust, and the 2020 group, But since the council had already embarked on their process, this idea was no longer feasible. What they did instead was to bring in an RIBA advisor whose report on the results of the two schemes presented is being used to support what seems a skewed outcome of an inappropriate brief with the intention of implementing a scheme alien to the needs of a city. To avoid another Silver Hill fiasco, informed advice has been freely offered to the council leader by individuals and local bodies professionally well-versed in architecture and urban planning, especially since the council is so woefully lacking in such expertise. Has the council taken any notice of these offers? It appears not. What of the appointed jury? Didn't they guide the outcome? Well, no, they weren't allowed to. Since the council did not want to lose control over their commercially biased brief, they gagged the jury by imposing legally binding confidentiality clauses, and at considerable cost to us taxpayers, a sum believed to be in excess of £100,000. Incredulous though it may seem, it is understood the officers would not even allow jurists to discuss design issues with the architects. Surely a decision contrary and detrimental to the purpose of any such competition. Neither has the jury been able to present these failings to the council, and since some of the jurists are city councillors, they find themselves silenced against their elected responsibilities as well. Surely not, one would think. Oh, yes, if you knew of the threat of huge financial penalties, they should speak out. Is this the way a council and his officers should treat them, or indeed anyone? The Ombudsman should be called upon to investigate. That is from Arthur Morgan, Edgar Road, Winchester.
And here's a letter for the football enthusiasts. From M. Sherwood. Red card abuse. Sir, I am an avid follower of non-league football and cannot wait for the start of the new season. However, with each passing season, the level of oafish abuse of officials by players and coaching staff of clubs gets worse and spoils the spectacle of the game. Apparently, the Football Association are to launch a new crackdown on such abuse. I do hope that it'll be an improvement on previous such initiatives, which have been utterly pathetic. M. Sherwood, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
This last letter is from Josephine Schupper, and it's entitled Train Users Should Show Respect. Sir, I left London Waterloo at 2:35 p.m. on South West trains, travelling with my 9-year-old son. Opposite us was a lady in her 60s with her legs outstretched, with her shoes resting on the seat in front. I would not do this, as a fellow passenger will sit there. My son had his shoes off whilst resting his legs on the seat. Later, this woman left the train at Winchester and, to my disgust, left her rubbish behind when there was a bin behind her. What an example to show to the younger generation. I have informed South West Trains and have suggested they put notices up on trains. I am awaiting their comments. Please respect our trains and the employees on the railway to make travelling by rail a more pleasurable experience. I hope you will be able to publish this letter. It needs to create awareness. That's from Josephine Schupper, Shea Road, Upper Shirley, Southampton.
Next, we have items of historical interest, and we have them from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
As 200 years ago was July the 29th, 1816, and it's headed Vintage Thievery. Late on Monday night or on Tuesday morning, the wine vaults of David's Street, Berkeley Square, were entered and robbed of 50 dozen of the best wine. The robbers broke open three strong doors. They regaled themselves, according to appearances, profusely with some of the choice wines and opened a number of bottles to ascertain the best sorts to be carried off. And with a truck, they carried off 50 dozen of the superior wines publicly on a Tuesday morning in a most daring manner. Three men were seen at 5:30 on Tuesday morning, dressed in caps, aprons, etc., which they wore in order to represent men employed in wine cellars. One of them had a book, pen and ink, and pretended to act as clerk, marking off the wine with which the truck was loaded.
Mm. 100 years ago, July the 29th, 1916... Birdsong on the front. The following is an extract from an interesting letter received from a bird fancier now on active service in France. The larks are quite as good as our own from a singing point of view, and it is simply splendid to hear them when we are in the trenches. What is more remarkable is to hear several larks singing in the air and at the same time shells bursting all around at the airmen, but it doesn't stop the larks.
50 years ago, July the 23rd, 1966, Jane Austen Society. A record crowd of 500 filled a marquee at Chawton on Saturday for the annual meeting of the Jane Austen Society, held at Chawton House by permission of Major and Mrs. Edward Knight. The Society's new president, Lord David Cecil, presided and welcomed those present on his first appearance in the chair. He revealed that the committee had thoroughly gone into the question of holding the 1967 annual meeting in Winchester in honour of the 150th anniversary of Jane Austen's death. They had decided against it, but a wreath should be laid on her tomb in Winchester Cathedral on July the 18th, next year.
And finally, 25 years ago was July the 26th, 1991, a call to halt M3 work. A complaint by opponents of the M3 bypass route that the British government has broken European Community rules in choosing the route east of St Catherine's Hill is valid. That is the view of the European Commission, and it has told the British government so. Mr. David Crocker, Mrs. Barbara Bryant and Mr. Merrick Denton Thompson, who made the complaint, are now calling for all work on the road construction, at present in the early stages, to be halted while the Commission completes its inquiries. Mr. Merrick Denton Thompson confirmed yesterday, the Commission originally wrote to the British Government and said, "We have this complaint. What do you think?" The UK has not responded. And the Commission has come back again and says it does not accept the UK's response.
Now we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, followed by letter from Westminster and then first person.
And the editorial comment is entitled, "As Parking Madness Ends Bid, What Now?" At the 11th hour, common sense prevailed, and the station approach scheme has been stopped in its tracks. Three Conservative councillors switched sides to kill off the proposals from Bidder B at the full council meeting last Wednesday. The definition of stupidity is making exactly the same mistakes again and again, and the City Council was getting close to that. The underlying issue with station approach, and also with Silver Hill, was the supposed need to cater for the car. More parking than is currently in the area was to be included in the development of the Carfax site. The cost of underground parking necessitated the need to make the offices the monsters that towered over the vicinity. Reduced the parking requirement, and immediately the pressure that created this bad scheme eases. Also, the need for parking has been reduced because South West Trains is set to build a deck on its car park on the western side of the station off Stockbridge Road. Park and Ride will be part of the Barton Farm development, just a mile up the road. The hope now is that the City Council will come back with a better scheme that everyone can, with a bit of compromise, support. The danger is that the suspicion, mistrust, and divisions that Silver Hill started and Station Approach stirred up will make such progress impossible.
The letter from Westminster is from Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. As Parliament rises and I embark on my summer tour, we reflect on an almost unparalleled time in British politics. A referendum, barely a month ago, that turned Westminster upside down, ended the career of one PM, made that of another, and did who knows what to the Labour Party. There has been a degree of scoffing at Theresa May's assertion that Brexit means Brexit, but I fail to see why. It's a simple statement of the fact that this government respects the result and Britain will leave the European Union. However, what Brexit actually looks like is an altogether harder exam question. And it's this we MPs have been set by the result of the referendum. Every MP has their areas of focus, drawn from personal commitment and constituency interest. And that's true in exiting the EU as it is in anything else. Let me highlight three today. Given the large number of my constituents that commute to London every day, I am obviously interested in how we maintain the city as the powerhouse of our economy and the place the world's big banks want to be. The early signs are encouraging. Last month, US giant Wells Fargo put £300 million on the table for a new world headquarters in London, while the likes of Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan have hailed the city as, quote, one of the most attractive places in the world to do business, unquote. I am grateful for the expert briefing I'm receiving from constituents working in this area. Equally, I'm working with environmental and nature protection organisations to see we take into UK law the best of, for example, the EU Habitats Directive, and blend it with other conventions and directives from outside the EU we will remain signed up to. That can all be drawn together as we honour a manifesto commitment to develop a 25-year plan for our environment. Finally, I am clear non-membership of the EU does not equal isolationism. And judging by conversations I have had with the Prime Minister and my first session with the new Secretary of State for International Trade, I know an independent UK, active on the world stage and a strong member of NATO, is not going to let that happen. Far from it, in fact.
Khalid Aziz writes, crisis. What crisis? Brexit has been settled, granted a few minor details still to be ironed out. Summer has finally turned up and we must turn our minds to more pressing matters. I am up to my thighs in pure chalk-filtered river water in one of the places I love to be most, the Bourne Rivulet in deepest Hampshire. The Bourne Rivulet is one of the tributaries to the world-renowned River Test, where piscatorialists flock from the far reaches of the world. A few years ago, you could have observed discreetly parked up at Southampton Airport the private jet of President George Bush Sr., who would regularly visit to get the kind of fishing hard to find even in the mighty United States of America. But back to me, in my languid stream. The sun is beating down. It is beautifully quiet, save for the distant clatter of a helicopter from Middle Wallop. A bright blue dragonfly flits by, shortly to be followed by the iridescent flashing blue of a kingfisher who pauses on a branch just long enough to let me see that he has already been successful with a tiny fish in his beak. Well, let's hope it's a stickleback rather than a baby trout. I am here courtesy of a local farmer friend who owns the land either side of a significant stretch of the rivulet and as such has the riparian rights. The ranunculus, water weed to the uninitiated, has just been cut. This takes place four times a season to ensure that the river continues to flow freely and the fish have the best possible conditions. Everything looks right, but it is too hot. Fish are torpid, lying on the bottom, seemingly oblivious to anything I cast to them. But not to worry, just being here is enough. 3 or 4 yards wide and varying in depth from a few inches to 4 feet, the rivulet is holding plenty of fish. They are all wild. On the lower reaches of the test, such is the demand for those who want to boast a test-caught trout, there is intensive stocking. This drives up the cost of fishing for a day, but greatly increases the chance of success. There is some snootiness amongst lifelong fisher folk about this, likening a stocked river to no more than a horizontal fish tank. These days the trend is not to stock and let the fish take care of matters for themselves. This means smaller fish initially, but year on year they grow. What's more, they're tricky. Everything has to be right, and in particular, the angler himself. Fly fishing for wild brown trout cannot be rushed. From putting together my 7-piece, 8-foot, 2-inch smuggler rod, ensuring each joint is properly pressed home to all the important selection and attaching of the fly, I use a simple tucked half-blood knot, ensuring I wet it before pulling it through tight to take out the friction heat of the nylon, which can otherwise weaken the cast. Then it's a case of spotting your fish, being aware of all the overhanging trees, just waiting to ensnare your tackle, and then casting a feather-light line just about a yard or two ahead of your quarry. If he likes what he sees, he will rise and take your fly. Then it's about timing. Years have taught me not to strike too quickly. It's so easy to pull the fly out of the fish's mouth. You have to wait a beat for the fish to half turn, and as you tighten into the fish, with luck, the hook will set inside the side of his mouth, which we fishermen call the scissors. Today they're having none of it. I occasionally move a fish, but they are more like browsers ambling about a shopping centre. They have no real intent. Frustrating. But then I see a decent fish, the largest so far this morning. There's something about the way he's swishing his tail, although he's not rising. Let's try. First cast, 6 inches to his right, about 2 foot ahead. The fly cruises by nicely. He ignores it. It passes him. 6 inches, a foot. He turns. He takes. He's mine. Who said the world would fall apart after a vote for Brexit?
There are no special announcement this week, but a few items of what's on which may interest you. On Sunday, the 7th of August, at the National Trust property Hinton Apner, there is a jazz Sunday, and you can relax on the lawn and listen between 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. That's Sunday, the 7th of August at Hinton Apner. On Tuesday, the 16th of August, there is a lunchtime concert in Winchester Cathedral between 1 and 2 p.m. with Claire Jones on the harp. And then on Saturday, the 20th of August, there are three items that may interest you. In Winchester Guildhall, there is a craft and gift market from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. At Badger Farm Hall, which I assume is the Badger Farm Community Centre, the Badger Farm Horticultural Society are holding their autumn show. Autumn, it seems a bit early for autumn in the August, but anyway, that's what I'm just reading out what it says. Anyway, if you'd like more information about that, telephone 01962 866 818. That's 01962 866 818 for the Badger Farm Horticultural Society. And also on Saturday the 20th of August, again at Hinton Apner, summertime jazz, sit in the gardens and listen, this time from midday to 3 p.m. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 29th of July, the sun rose just before 5:30 in the morning and will set just before, around about 5 to 9 in the evening. And on the Wednesday of next week, sunrise is at 25 to 6 in the morning, and sunset is at 10 to 9 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and who would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. We now move to items of general news interest. The paper this week seems to have been dominated by planning issues. We've already heard about the station approach plans, the plans for a new leisure centre. And we're now going to have an item about a conference that was held at West Downs. It says, I'll read out a little introduction to it. As the conference at West Down thrashed out how Winchester should face the future, the City Council is struggling with a crisis in two major schemes. Silver Hill collapsed earlier in the year after the council ran out of patience with the co-developer THRE. The £150 million scheme would have seen shops, offices and housing in the city centre. The development was derailed by a High Court legal challenge from the City Councillor Kim Gottlieb that led to a damning report from Claire Lloyd-Jones about how the council operates. Councillor Gottlieb is now leading a group to devise a new development. The latest setback has been the vote on Winchester on Wednesday to scupper the design for Station Approach, a large office development at the railway station, also known as the Carfax site. Proposals for the cattle market have been put back 18 months. And looming on the horizon is the fate of St John Moore Barracks at Littleton, with the Ministry of Defence reviewing its future. So we're now going to have a report on this conference that was held at West Downs about the potential future options for Winchester, and that will then be followed by a smaller item about the proposals for the John Moore Barracks.
Yes, this is headed Debate Raging on City's Future. A city where cars are guests and which is good for children, or a city that develops as a business centre with a steady growth in population and house building. A city where pedestrians and cyclists hold sway, or motorists. The contrasting visions for the future were thrashed out at a conference in Winchester on Thursday. Civic chiefs, business people, community activists and environmental campaigners met to discuss ways the city, often hailed as the nicest place to live in Britain, can evolve. There were so many differing views that cannot be reconciled, creating distrust and tensions, as seen over the Silver Hill scheme and over how to manage traffic. The City Council has made it clear it wants to see the city develop as a business centre, but its scheme for Silver Hill collapsed and its new plans for a major development of Station Approach were derailed on Wednesday night after councillors voted to reject the current design. At the conference, City Council leader Stephen Godfrey tackled the dilemma head-on and said the Winchester district would be under immense pressure over the next few years, with 12,000 to 13,000 homes due to be built in the next 15 years. Are we going to find jobs for them, or will they all be commuters? Is Winchester going to become a non-working area? How should Winchester respond to the challenges? Pulling up the drawbridge and hiding behind the ramparts to prevent more people coming here, resisting development or embracing the inevitable change. He argued that standing still will see the city stagnate. But many people do think the city should resist house building and concentrate on its culture, tourism and hospitality sectors. George Ferguson, an architect and independent mayor of Bristol from 2012 to last May, said he felt strongly about making a place, building a sense of community. We should make a city that is good for children. If you make a city good for children, you make a city good for everybody, a sustainable city with good, clean air. David Ash of Winchester Action on Climate Change says, reduce car parking by 80% and see what happens. We need to be doing things so people can get engaged. There are parts of Winchester that have been consulted to death. Another idea was that in the suburbs, new homes could be much taller than the city centre, where two and three stories predominate. Local roads could be closed on Sundays so people could reclaim the streets, an idea such as Play Street launched in St Catherine's Road, Highcliffe, earlier this year. Simon Finch, Assistant Director, Environment of the City Council, said, "Winchester is a very challenging place for planners. It is safeguarding and preserving what people think is great about Winchester, but also being able to develop it so it remains that way for the next 1,000 years. Chris Turner of Winchester Business Improvement District said the city was booming, with only 5% vacancy in the 110 units on the High Street. Simon Hake, Chartered Surveyor with Charters, said there was a shortage of office space, with developers preferring residential, as they can charge £500 per square foot for a home compared to £275 a square foot for offices. Mr Hake said that the council may even have to consider some form of subsidy or making available publicly owned land for offices. Keith Lehman, Chairman of the City of Winchester Trust Preservation Watchdogs, said that the city had to accept growth but needed a strategy so people understand where it's going to go. Catherine Turnis, Executive Director of BID, said a big issue was how to get people to accept that Winchester needs to change. Councillor James Burns, Portfolio Holder for Transport, said it was vital to get public support for any radical policy and asked, "Will people in cars adapt to Winchester or will they go to Eastleigh? We could ban traffic from the Westgate to Winnell. Or we could build a 10-storey car park on Middlebrook Street. It's about finding somewhere in the middle." The event was attended by around 80 invited guests at West Down campus. They included Trinity, Peter Simmons College students, the University Student Union, people from Stanmore and Highcliffe, Winchester Deserves Better, and SALT, the sports campaigners.
Hats off to graduates at San Manin City. Years of hard work, blood, sweat and tears were celebrated in special graduation ceremony in Winchester. Sparshall College students streamed through the streets of the city last week in their mortarboards and gowns as the college celebrated the graduations of its first postgraduate students at its annual presentation day. The college awarded 9 master's degrees alongside 163 foundation and bachelor degrees and a host of further education certificates and diplomas. Winchester Cathedral provided the stunning backdrop as families, friends and lecturers proudly watched students mark the successful end of their studies. Principal Tim Jackson presided over the 2 ceremonies. During his address, he reflected on Sparshield College's achievements throughout the year, highlighting the exciting developments within the faculties which specialise in land-based education, supporting students to turn their passion into a career. Joining Tim Jackson was guest of honour and speaker the Earl of Selborne, who commended the graduates and commented on how their qualifications would stand them in good stead for their future careers. Mr. Jackson said, "The past academic year has been highly successful for the college. Over 2,000 qualifications have been awarded, with around 700 of these being presented at today's ceremonies." Mr. Jackson added, "We have an excellent employment rate, as many of our students have already secured employment nationally and overseas." And this article is accompanied by a colour photograph of the students in their gowns and throwing their mortarboards into the air, looking very, very happy and proud. And so the traditional exuberant end to the annual Sparshall College graduation ceremony outside Winchester Cathedral. And there it stands grandly in the background.
Intrepid woman walks 100 kilometres. A Wanston woman has completed a 100-kilometre walk for charity. Pip Varley, 59, trod from London to Brighton to raise money for Blind Veterans UK. She did the walk as part of doing a challenge every month before her 60th birthday in November. Mrs. Farley, a learning support assistant at Long Parish Primary School, said, "I want to try lots of different things and challenge myself before my 60th birthday. I've already had a New Year's Day swim in the sea, a 10-mile run, and turned a wooden bowl. I will be taking part in a blindfolded 10K run around the Olympic Park in November. This 100-kilometre walk was the hardest thing I've ever done."
Proposals for new council properties. Residents in Stanmore saw proposals for a new council homes in the valley. A consultation over the housing and open space improvements was held at St Luke's Church in Mildmay Street. Most of the open space at the valley will be retained and improved under the proposals. The pedestrian routes will also be retained and improved. Access drives will be provided to the new homes, but there will be no through routes for vehicles. Detailed proposals will be drafted over the summer, taking account of community feedback. The City Council will seek community views on the detailed drawings in September before making a planning application later in 2016. Councillor Caroline Horrell, Winchester City Council's portfolio holder for housing, said, "This is a huge problem for housing affordability locally, and the City Council is committed to providing new council homes to tackle the problem, which includes the proposals for the Valley."
Funding for church roofs. Three Winchester churches have received major grants from the Heritage Lottery Fund towards essential roof repairs. St Swithin upon Kingsgate will receive £23,200. St Matthew with St Paul in Wick gets £84,000. And St John the Evangelist at Northington near Alsford will get £99,500. Sir Tony Baldry, chair of the Church Building Council, said, "It is fantastic that a further 400 church buildings will receive significant help with roof repairs from government, and we are hugely grateful to the Chancellor. We now need to ensure a sustainable way of funding church buildings in future, and this is a question which I hope the Department for Culture, Media and Sport Task Force on Church Buildings will find viable and deliverable answers." The St Matthew's project aims to undertake comprehensive repair of the tiled roof and to carry out a minor rearrangement of the west end of the Norman Church to allow it to be used for a wider range of functions. The tiles on the Grade 2 listed medieval parish church have begun to shift and the roof battens are beginning to rot. The wooden supports for the organ loft and belfry also need strengthening, and the church was recently placed on the Heritage at Risk list.
Cricketers battle it out to raise funds for club. Spectators of all ages headed to Easton in the Itchen Valley for a family fun day to raise money for the local cricket club. The Easton Sixes tournament at the David Roth Memorial Ground drew crowds from across the county as 8 teams battled for victory. The event, sponsored by Charters for the fourth year running, was organised by Easton and Marto Worthy Cricket Club to raise funds for its Junior Development Academy, which coaches and mentors players aged 13 to 21. The action kicked off on Thursday with an Itchen Valley tug-of-war competition, won by Trevor Compton's Easton Village team. The Friday fun day also included two bouncy castles, paddling pools, ice creams, bar and hog roast. The Sixes trophy was won by the Fenwick Elliott Eagles team, which included several EMWCC coaches and young players. Their under-11 team member, Monty Randall, won Player of the Day for taking two wickets in one over. The celebrations continued on Sunday when the club marked its 70th birthday with an intergenerational match, and Hampshire's Jimmy Adams ran a coaching session for juniors. The club president of 58 years, John Roth, planted a tree to mark the special birthday. Memorial plaques for the following stalwart club members were also planted: Ben Marsh, Eric Thompson, and Jess Hobbs.
A golden day for dozens of Duke of Edinburgh Award participants. Dozens of young people struck gold when they received the Duke of Edinburgh's Gold Award. At the ceremony in the Great Hall, Winchester, they were presented with a certificate from the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson. The Lord Lieutenant said, "These young people have demonstrated a huge commitment and determination to gain this very prestigious award, and they can be very proud of their achievement. I know they will all have thoroughly enjoyed the challenge too. As there's a real need for leaders to train the next generation of young participants, I would urge them to continue their good work and enjoyment by offering their time and skills as volunteers to the Duke of Edinburgh's award scheme." This is accompanied by a photograph of several dozen very smiling-looking young people in the Great Hall, some of them in scout or guide or cadet uniform, surrounding the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, who is in full ceremonial dress. They're looking very happy, but in the background there is the glowering figure of Queen Victoria, who is clearly thinking, "We are not amused."
Muslims put case for a base. This is the single most important opportunity in our history, so said the Winchester Muslim Cultural Association, who has pleaded with the City Council for a permanent base. Members spoke at Winchester's local plan meeting on Friday to convince Chairman Nigel Payne to write them into the plan. In February, the charity expressed a desire to find a bigger place of worship, as they have outgrown their regular meeting room in Winchester Guildhall. Group member Pierre Jardin Qureshi said, "It is a crying shame that we do not have permanent premises in the city. Here is an opportunity for us to finally get somewhere permanent. We want to work together and not to be excluded." Mr. Qureshi added that the council had a duty to provide a hub in the centre of the city, as set out in the National Planning Policy Framework. "We do not want a talking shop, but an obligation from the council to provide this multicultural centre. There is no compromise. We no longer wish to be excluded and think we have been very patient." The group say they want a building that can provide a cultural home for Muslims. Mif Kayum, secretary for the association, said the former registry office on Station Hill would be perfect. He said it is perfect in terms of size and space and has great railway links for our members that travel from outside Winchester. "We need a multi-purpose, multicultural centre, and we believe we are being reasonable in our request. This is the single most important opportunity in our history." His son, Salomon, said he wanted the centre to better educate people about Islam. "I am very fortunate to go to a Christian school," he said. "I want my friends to have a better understanding of Islam, as there is a misconception around it. The new centre will enable us to educate young people about our faith and also build a sense of community." Chairman Nigel Green agreed with the association. "I think, from what I have heard, they are looking for a place to provide them with a space in the city. This is not an unreasonable request, and the question is, where should this be? It would be remiss of me if I did not say it was a strong possibility of going into the local plan."
First tenant moves into converted library. A former library on a Winchester estate has been converted into a council flat. Library House on Wavell Way, which has now been moved to the Carroll Centre, welcomed its first new tenant this month. It comes after it was agreed the building would be converted into council social rented accommodation as part of the Housing Review Account property conversion programme. Winchester City Council's portfolio holder for housing, Caroline Horrill, praised the scheme. Councillor Horrill said, "There are currently over 2,000 applicants on the City Council's housing register waiting for appropriate housing, and a high proportion require one-bedroom accommodation, so this unit is a welcome addition to the housing available in the Winchester district." Planning approval was granted in February 2016, and since then the City Council has been carrying out works to convert the building into a one-bedroom ground floor flat. The cost of the work is approximately £37,000, much cheaper than building a new property of the same size. The new tenant at Library House, Angela Pittman, said, "It's brilliant that I've been offered a tenancy with Winchester City Council. I'm very happy." The City Council has a policy stretching back to the time when George Backett was council leader of building 300 council houses over 10 years to start to offset the loss to the publicly owned stock through the Right to Buy programme from the 1980s.
Hate crime call over abuse levels. More than 1,000 healthcare workers, including paramedics, were assaulted in Hampshire last year, and three police officers every day are attacked in the county. It prompted calls by Chairman of the Hampshire Police Federation, John Apter, for assaults on emergency services to be classed as hate crimes. Last year, there were 1,118 physical and verbal assaults on police. Figures by South Central Ambulance Service reveal other vital 999 staff regularly face abuse. Between June 2015 and May 2016, there were 281 physical and verbal assaults on SCAS staff. A spokesman for the SCAS said the Trust will also place markers or alerts on the addresses of patients or individuals who have been aggressive or violent towards our staff. If a member is assaulted, we will work with the police to try to obtain a sanction against the perpetrator. Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust reported 1,627 physical attacks in 2014-15, more than four a day. University College Southampton staff reported 275 assaults in the same year, while Solent NHS Trust staff were attacked 196 times, and staff from Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust and Isle of Wight NHS Trust 175 and 95 times, respectively. Firefighters have also faced the public deliberately obstructing them and have had stones thrown at them.
Anger of toy shop owners. The owners of a Winchester toy shop, which will be closing, say the City Council needs to listen more to the local business community. Childhood's Dream, in the Brooks Shopping Centre, will close on August the 27th. The business itself will continue online. The shop, which is owned by Susan and Tony Wyman from Alsford, was originally in Southgate Street and moved to the Brooks in 2013. The Wymans opted against renewing the lease and said issues like the chronic loss of car parking and its impact on footfall and turnover was a major factor in their decision. In a statement, they said, "Up to this year, we were able to compete successfully. But Winchester's problems seem to have finally hit home this winter and removed our ability to survive by selling more." They point to the closures of Friarsgate car park, and then the Chesil Street surface car park, and the Upper Brook Street car park, which will close, which have led to a lack of footfall and trade. Their statement said the council has to do more to help the business community in Winchester. We have really enjoyed running our toy shop, and we would like to thank all our loyal customers, adults and children alike. Winchester has the potential to be a great shopping destination. But not only does the town desperately need improvement to its infrastructure and the restoration of adequate city centre car parking, but it also needs a council that actively supports, listens to and nurtures the town's business community. The council has been made aware so many times of the dire effect that its car parking and other policies have had on the town, but even though they seem to be starting to listen, there is no sense of urgency that could help justify continuing to invest and trade in Winchester.
Party for Church's Birthday. Parishioners and the local community celebrated a special birthday of St Mark's Church. The church in Oliver's Battery held a weekend of celebrations for its 60th birthday. Children enjoyed a bouncy cathedral, which was lent by Winchester Cathedral, and large crows descended on the historic green space at the church on Oliver's Battery Road. On Sunday, worshippers attended a service of thanksgiving, which included several past clergy visiting. Overall, the weekend attracted hundreds of people from the Oliver's Battery area.
Duo in 9,000-foot skydive for Trinity. Two brave women fell from more than 9,000 feet to raise nearly £1,500 for a Winchester charity. Louise and Katie, who have been helped by Trinity Winchester's services, took part in a skydive, reaching speeds of up to 125 miles an hour. Katie first accessed Trinity in 2013, when her tenancy was at risk and her mental health was poor, while Louise took part to raise money and of awareness of the service. Trinity provides for victims of domestic abuse.
I'm looking at a colour photograph, taken presumably outside the Buttercross. Thank you. About the Buttercross. showing the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter, with two young helpers, making a coin outline of King Alfred's statue. These coins were collected from the passers-by and they amounted to around £400. And Mrs. Rutter said it was well worth doing. The people of Winchester are very generous, and I must say the outline of King Alfred's statue is very recognisable, given by the coins that are laid out there, and a whole lot more coins to fill in the statue as well. It looks like a very successful venture.
Council merger opinions wanted. Thousands are being urged to have their say on a series of master plans which could change Hampshire's political landscape forever. Hampshire County Council is launching a £150,000 consultation, asking people to give their verdict on landmark devolution plans which could shake up how council services ranging from health, social care, roads and transport to bin collections are run. Hampshire County Council leader, Councillor Roy Perry, says the consultation is a chance to have their say to ensure vital services can be protected in future. But critics have condemned the move as reverse devolution, saying it could lead to the creation of a super council where they claim local people will ultimately have less influence on decision making. It is the latest step in a long-running battle sparked by the government's plans for devolution of political powers from Westminster as part of radical powers aimed at giving local regions more control over decision-making and shaping their own futures.
Council vents anger in rude tweet. A senior city councillor has come under fire for a controversial tweet where she accused fellow councillors of having their heads stuck up their AR*E*S. Please insert your own letter. Group manager of Winchester City Council Conservative Group, Linda Gemmell, aired her frustration on social media about the implications of councillors voting against moving forward on a multi-million pound scheme for station approach. Councillor Gemmell tweeted, "Full council at Winchester was the biggest display of people with their heads stuck so far up their AR*E*S, they couldn't see..." And the rest of it has been redacted by the editor. The council meeting on Wednesday night was a long and heated affair which went on for more than 6 hours and finished after 1 a.m. Liberal Democrat Councillor Martin Todd was one of the 19 councillors who voted against the winners of the design competition being chosen as the preferred architect to move the scheme forward. Councillor Todd told the Chronicle, "Swearing at the people who won the argument at council doesn't give me much hope that the Conservatives have any clue as to why they got the project so badly wrong." But leader of Winchester City Council, Stephen Godfrey, defended Councillor Gemmell. He said he is frustrated that councillors voted against moving forward a scheme that has clear benefits for the local economy. Speaking about the tweet, Councillor Godfrey said, "I am not going to criticise anyone for expressing their views passionately. It's a bit like modern art. It's meant to elicit a reaction." The Chronicle approached Councillor Gemmell for a comment. She said she was too busy to talk and was about to go into a meeting. She did not answer further calls.
Cyclists complete 9th Alfred Ride, a community cycle ride that celebrates the life of King Alfred the Great, has completed its 9th instalment. Around 160 riders pedalled 53 miles from Wantage, Alfred's birthplace, to Winchester, where he died in 899. Organised by Hyde 900 and local social enterprise Bespoke Biking, the ride was welcomed home by Councillor Jane Rutter, the Mayor of Winchester. The route went along country lanes, along the Vale of the White Horse and over the Marlborough Downs and the North Hampshire Downs, with easy cycling through the sleepy villages of the Bourne Valley. So many riders were saying how beautiful the ride was through the stunning countryside, said Heather Evans of Bespoke Biking. Hyde 900 celebrates the 900th anniversary of the founding of Hyde Abbey. Steve Marper, its chairman, said, "Our journey follows the story of King Alfred's life. We start beneath Alfred's statue in Wantage, his birthplace, and finish near Winchester's own statue of Alfred in the Broadway."
Mail deliveries. The Winchester Delivery Office is now open for customers to collect and drop off parcels and letters on Sundays. The office at Winnell Manor Road will open from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. The National Sunday Opening Initiative is designed to make it easier for online shoppers not at home during the day to get their parcels at a convenient time over the weekend. Royal Mail's 1,200 delivery offices are currently open 6 days a week, and around half of its customer service points are open later on Wednesday evenings for customers to collect or drop off items. In addition, around 100 of its busiest offices are also already open on Sundays. Mike Newnham, Royal Mail's chief customer officer, said, "We are continuing to be more responsive to our customers and are providing even more options for people to receive items they've ordered online." Mr. Newnham added, "Our extended opening hours initiative and additional Sunday openings is just one of the ways we are transforming our business to be more customer focused."
Rescue dog Byron dies aged 11. Tributes have been paid to a Hampshire rescue dog that helped hundreds of people in disaster zones worldwide. Byron was deployed in Japan, the Czech Republic, and Germany. Based in Stockbridge with his handler, Robin Furness, he was one of the world's most highly trained hounds, passing the United Nations Mission Readiness Test. Close to home, he had been called to collapse buildings in London and gas explosion in Woolston. Byron died last week, aged 11, after complications from a spinal injury picked up while training as a puppy. And there is a photograph of Byron, who is a Welsh collie, in front of a bright yellow RAF helicopter.
On that touching story, we end our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And our thanks to our readers, who were Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.